AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
The kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Hello, everybody. You're welcome along to another episode of The Kickoff. As always, off the balls, Colin Buhig is here. How are you doing, sir?
Hi, buddy. What's going on?
Come here. We have a few bits to get through on the show. Later on, I'm going to be joined by our colleague, Phil Egan, okay? Yeah. We'll chat about what's going on with Liverpool, because there's lots of questions there, isn't there?
Yeah, he's the resident off the ball Liverpool supporter, you know, and he'll be open about that because he's quite mature as a Liverpool fan, you know. But he, in fairness to Phil, now he's been saying for a few weeks that Liverpool are in trouble under Arne Slot. So I was kind of positing on off the ball. But before that trio of games that they had against Aston Villa, Real Madrid and Manchester City, I said, geez, if he gets 0 from 3 here, possibility. And if no, Liverpool aren't that type of football club. They're patient, etc. Now, they did sack Roy Hodgson after a few months, but this is a little different. You have a defending Premier League champion here. But it has happened before in the Premier League too. In fact, happened in consecutive years. 2015, Jose Mourinho had won Chelsea the Premier League in a second stint with the club, and weeks into that campaign left. And at the end of that season, of course, Leicester City famously won the Premier League.
Yes.
And then weeks later, it felt, months later in reality, but a very short time after, Claudio Ranieri departs the club. So it has been done. It's not unprecedented in Premier League history. However, what legitimately is a case like the passing of Diogo Jota. And we don't know how that's really impacting the players. We can speculate, we can assume that it's a huge loss, and maybe that affects motivation or commitment or in terms of focus of what they should be achieving. But we'll never know that for sure. So can't really talk about that. But what is happening is that they signed a load of new players and it hasn't aligned anywhere near the level that people anticipate.
Yeah, and I didn't want to get an overly emotional fan because I think then they might just be calling for Arnie's head at this stage. Yeah. So I got Phil, who is, he's very straightforward and very factual. So he will be on and we'll get his thoughts. Or maybe he'll start screaming and shouting and bang the table, get him out, get him out. We'll also look ahead to some of the games happening this weekend. I think the tastiest one and the biggest one, it definitely is Arsenal v Chelsea. Can Chelsea close the gap on Arsenal, who are just, they've won the league now. They've just won the league. But we must continue our quest to pick the greatest Premier League 11 of all time. Well, Colm's choices. I think he might have rubbed someone up the wrong way. We will get to that. Already we have Schmeichel in the goal, Schmeichel, Man United great. And something that has upset someone, Trent Alexander-Arnold is our right back. Today we're going to pick our left back.
Yeah.
And then next week we'll look at the who are going to be the two guys that are best fitted in between the two lads. But I think you might have upset someone, did you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, more than one person, but one prominent individual in Irish media, which was your dear friend, Dave Moore. Who I was saying to you there, texted me at 5:41 p.m. last Saturday. So for people with good memories, that was 60 seconds or so into Ireland against South Africa, a massive rugby match at the Aviva Stadium in the November series. And Dave texted me with three different all-time Premier League 11s, none of which included Trent at right back. I says, geez, you must be mad into your rugby, are you? And then he replied with a picture of him watching rugby. He said, oh, I know I am. I was like, this is how much is causing consternation in the life of the great Dave Moore. Because the day prior, I was chatting with him and he was already livid. And then I think it just bubbled up over the weekend.
Couldn't sleep.
To the point where when I walked in the door here to record, he said, if there's not a certain individual represented at left back, I'm never talking to you again. I'm never going to listen to the kickoff ever again. And Cathal's job might be in trouble just by association.
Oh, I really didn't think you'd upset him that much.
No,
but
I didn't think I'd upset anybody with this list. I thought it would just be like something that we do on the show that's kind of interesting. But I'm getting texts from people who I haven't heard from since the Leaving Cert. Trent! Hope you're doing well.
Do you regret your decision?
No, I'm. I feel more, even more vindicated.
Hey, look how Liverpool are doing without the man. Look at what they're, look what's happening over there.
Yeah, yeah.
So totally. Today, you want to go left back today?
Yeah, I want to do left back first, so that it puts context into the centre back partnership, which I think will be really interesting next week. Because do I go for individual centre half quality or partnership? So that'll be a big one. Okay. Left back is an interesting one. So where we kind of edited this down to have about three honourable mentions and then a top three.
Yeah.
So honourable mentions would be Ian Hart, the great Ian Hart. From an Irish perspective,
I like the way you have an honourable mention for an Irish player in each one. That better keep.
Yeah,
up.
I don't. That's not shoehorned.
Okay. Yeah, it's not, is it?
It's a debate with that, because if you really think about the great left backs in the Premier League history, it's not a massive list. It's not a huge list. Objectively, the players were great. Then you can debate the rest.
Yeah,
Ian Hart will, of course, be debatable. If we were doing this show in the UK, outside of Leeds, we probably wouldn't have Ian Hart anywhere near the conversation. But I suppose in hindsight, it's lovely to have had an Irish player at left back who was so prominent at a time when a team was doing really well in the Premier League. Leeds United, under Dave O'Leary, the turn of the century, were a fantastic Premier League outfit, and he was their left back. And some of the goals he scored, his free kicks particularly, a great technical player, and good for the Republic of Ireland too at the same time.
And he mightn't be the only Irish player on this list, I have a feeling. Is Ian Hart a agent now, or am I wrong there?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So he's involved in football in some way, but not as prominent as maybe you think he would be. I thought we'd see more of Ian Hart, but I suppose he went a slightly different route than the punditry game or the management one.
Okay, so
that's one. Stuart Pearce is another, the England great. The only reason he's actually not in the official top three is because the Premier League era was maybe just slightly past his peak. Now, right. he was one of England's defenders at Euro 96, which is 4 years into the Premier League. But it still feels like the late 80s, very early 90s were his absolute pomp. But for Nottingham Forest and then a bit later with Newcastle, hell of a player. Just listen to Roy Keane talk about how good he was, both as a professional and as a player himself. Mm. Graham Lasso for Blackburn, and then Chelsea. So he won the Premier League with Blackburn in the mid-90s. Very good technical player too. So I think all these left backs have in common is like very good technical players. Whereas say Gary Neville got second on my list, wouldn't be the most technical player of all time. All of these players kind of have that in abundance, but there is something sweet about a left footer. Yeah. I think it just looks better. It's like 10% better looking as a left back.
Yeah, my dad was a left footer.
There you go.
He's not Ryan Giggs now, but he was.
Are you? Are you right?
I'm barely at that.
All right. So they're my honourable mentions.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So your top three.
Top three.
Number three.
Number three on the list is going to be Patrice Evra of Manchester United, right? So Evra signs for the club January 2006, has a nightmare debut of epic proportions in none other than the Manchester Derby at their place, at City's place, gets hooked at halftime. And Alex Ferguson says to Evra, "You're going to sit next to me in the dugout for the second half so you can watch how you play in the Premier League." And it looked like he was going to be a disastrous signing, Evra, along with Nemanja Vidic. They both signed in the same month, January 2006.
Okay.
And give it about 6 to 12 months later, they finally start solidifying themselves, both of them, in the Manchester United starting 11. And that aligns with United's resurgence and probably the last great Alex Ferguson side at the club, in that the 2006-07 season was the first of three Premier League titles in a row, and throwing a Champions League winning medal too into that in 08.
Yeah.
And Evra was the undoubted, undisputed, incomparable left back at the time.
Imagine what he felt like sitting beside Ferguson making the big move to cold Manchester from Lyon, or where was
Monaco.
It? Monaco.
And he had reached a Champions League final with Monaco in 2004, but they got well beaten by Jose Mourinho's Porto in that decider. Marauding is often a word used for a fullback who has legs, but he was that. He was up and down. He's very good defensively and just very sound. I suppose my biggest compliment to him would, I just trusted him.
Yeah.
Trusted him all day long.
Okay, that's pretty good.
And he won everything.
Yeah, and won everything. Yeah. Not the biggest man.
No.
Okay, this is interesting, right? Yeah. I was trying to guess what your top three would be.
Okay.
And I hope Dave Moore didn't spook you now.
No.
But I do think your number two is going to be an Irishman.
Oh, wow, do you? Unfortunately not. Or maybe fortunately.
For you, yeah.
My number two on the list is Ashley Cole.
Okay.
Both Arsenal and Chelsea. I think Cole is reputation.
This is also very arguable, isn't it? Like, you could argue this one probably in a pub down the road for hours on end.
Let's just say, I'll give him, he's the best left-footed left-back in Premier League history, all right? I'll give him that. He's not the best left-back. We'll get to that. Ashley Cole, unbelievable defender, first of all. And for full-backs, not often the case. So a case in point is Cristiano Ronaldo. So if you watch their battles, when he played for Manchester United in the 2000s against Ashley Cole at either Arsenal or Chelsea, and then for Portugal against England, because they played each other in two tournaments in a row, Euro 2004, World Cup 2006, it would have been Ronaldo against Ashley Cole. And Ashley Cole almost always got the better of Ronaldo.
Really?
Is, you know, this was like the Cristiano who would do most of his footballing out wide in the wing and create just as many assists as goals. And Ashley Young just had a number. He had his number all day long. Pace, anticipation, technique, would score the odd beautiful goal for both Arsenal and Chelsea. There was one at Villa Park he scored for Arsenal. I think it's his last goal for Arsenal. Bergkamp passes it to him. It's like a first-time volley past the goalkeeper. Technically supreme player, brilliant defender. Not the most popular guy, and I think that really goes against him because of the famous quote he has going from Arsenal to Chelsea is Arsenal would only offer him 55 grand a week or something for a new contract. And he describes it as like, that's a joke, that's an insult. I nearly crashed the car because it was such an insult. And obviously that's an extremely unrelatable sentence to say to the every person on the street. So I think he got unfairly branded as a kind of mercenary type.
Okay, right.
But he wasn't really. He was like, he just so happened to go from a huge London rival to another in Arsenal and Chelsea. Two teams who were equatable in the same division is going to cause consternation to the fans he just left. And I think he, you know, he'd have the odd thing where he'd, there was an incident where Chelsea were away to Spurs at White Hart Lane and Mike Riley was the referee and Riley's booking him. Ashley Cole turns around and goes, book me, go on, book me. And like one in face Riley. So I think there was a feeling that he just kind of had a disrespect for people. He looked down on people. That was, I always got the sense that was what people felt about him. So they wouldn't rate him as highly as he should have been rated. And he's still incredibly highly rated.
He kind of became a bit more of a celebrity than a football player at times as well, which often
Cheryl,
is...
Cheryl, yeah, his wife.
Cheryl, like, you know, sometimes we're still getting used to calling her Cheryl and not Cheryl Cole, you know? That's actually...
Exactly.
But, I, you know, it's kind of the same thing that happened to David Beckham. Sometimes you'd forget how good of a footballer David Beckham actually was.
Yeah.
You know? So, good, interesting points made. I did think that he would be your number one. So.
That's why I said he's the best left-footed left-back in Premier League. I'll give him that. But my top left-back, the one who's in this team, is none other than a man local to me from Talker, Dennis Irwin.
Irwin, it's three! And everything they hit ends up in the back of the net. And even by Manchester United standards, this is simply stunning.
This is incredible, Mark. They didn't have a player, look, they don't have a player anywhere near the box. They must have so much confidence in Dennis Irwin's ability and he didn't disappoint them.
Dennis Irwin, who was right-footed. So we had him in studio back in April.
How cool was that?
It was, that was really kind of like, relax here now. This is a bit of a hero of yours.
Yeah.
Treated like any other interview, you know. It was amazing. It was one of the most comfortable interviews I've ever done.
Because you were just talking to another Cork man.
Not a Cork man. It wasn't even anything to do with United. It was exactly. It was, that was literally.
How great is Cork?
Because that's how we started off talking about Cork. Because he's a big GA man. He's a big Cork GA man from that time as well. So he played at Croke Park, like under 15 level. He was a really good hurler.
Yeah.
Like really, really good. Yeah, really good hurler. Good Gaelic footballer too. Really strong hurler.
What would his club have been?
Bears.
The Bears.
Been Bears, yeah. So, because Everton Football Club, who he played for. I played for the same club later on. That's, it's all nearby, like it's all the same area. So the fascinating thing about Irwin, right, he never played left back ever until he went to Manchester United. For Alex Ferguson put him left back one day. So the guy, he started off as a centre back,
yes,
would
okay.
you believe?
Okay.
So he was originally, his first couple of clubs were Leeds United and Oldham Athletic. And then United signed him. So he's a centre back first, but they're not really having him there. Then he goes to right back. And he actually played right back for the Republic of Ireland loads. He played right back for United as well the odd time. But I think either injuries or something happened at the club that Ferguson said, you're playing left back. And I asked him that this April in studio and he said, "What? How did that conversation go?" And he's like, well, it's not a conversation.
He was told.
He'll tell you anyone, okay, fair enough. Just like he was told he was on penalties for United. So like with all the players that Irwin played with, so like you have Cantona, and Scholes and Cole and York and Beckham and Giggs, all these technically brilliant players. Irwin was given the penalties.
Yeah,
you know, and I was like, why? And he said, Ferguson just saw something in me. And the thing about him was, you know, he's renowned as a quiet man, but he's incredibly confident. Like, there's just self-confidence oozes from him. Because it just kind of reminds you that, like, the most confident person isn't necessarily the loudest in the room. There's a quiet assuredness about him. And even to this day, talking about his career, like, he's so comfortable. Like, he should have got more Ireland caps. He was left out of the Italian 90 squad, which is a big call to make by Jack Charlton at the time, because he was excelling at club level. And then USA 94, he was suspended for a game and then left out in the last game, which is hard to believe, like, because he had just won the double with United that summer.
Yeah, you don't really see him. You know, when you do picture him, in my head anyway, when I picture him, I'm thinking of him in the Manchester United sharp jersey.
Yeah.
And not so much in an Ireland jersey.
No, it's amazing. But he still played plenty of times and he still scored a few goals for Ireland. But yeah, I think there's an element of regret about his international career that it could have been better.
Yeah.
And like the 2002 World Cup just comes just too late for him. And then when Mick McCarthy was appointed the first time around to succeed Jack Charlton, he kind of challenged Irwin to prove himself. And Irwin was kind of like, quite rightly, without saying it or insisting upon it, like, prove what? Like, there's no Dennis Irwin here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he was just about to win the treble a couple of years later. But in terms of him as a footballer, right, the reason he's in for me is just, he gives you everything. So free kicks. Do you see some of his free kicks?
Like, yeah.
There's one in Anfield, particularly in January 1994. It's a 3-3 game and finishes. You won't see a better free kick. Both of his feet leave the ground. Just curls into the top left corner. This is a fullback doing that. He scores a great goal where he's a 1-2 at Eric Cantona and he chests it and finishes it with his left foot. And this is where the left foot of conversation comes in, where some of his great assists are crossing the ball in with his left foot on the left wing, running down the wing. But he was essentially a right-footed player who could play with his left foot.
Yeah.
So he gives you goals, gives you assists, good defender. So Ashley Cole didn't give you as many goals, wasn't on free kicks, wasn't on penalties. Same can be said for Patrice Evra. So Irwin, I think, was a brilliant defender as well, but had a genuine goal threat to him, whether it was directly or indirectly. You can't ask for much more from your left back.
Yeah, I think you've sold me there. I need a great attitude as well, which stands for a lot in this team, because there could be a few people,
yeah,
you know, that he might need to put his arm around. I have a feeling, and he's that kind of guy.
So far we have Schmeichel in goal, and we have Trent at right back, we have Earn at left back. It's looking good, like.
It is looking good. I wonder, will Irwin be the only Cork man in this team? We shall see. So next week, you're going to go just the two centre-halves?
It gets real difficult now from next week onwards, I think.
And I guess you're going to have to think about who fits in with those two as well.
It's a team, Cahill.
Yeah, okay.
Because presumably we're going to have a game here.
Hopefully. You know? If we can afford it, yeah, yeah.
I have to say, right, that I thought, the goalkeeper and particularly the left back, to a lesser degree, the right back, easy enough choices. It gets hard now from next week on.
I'm looking forward to it. Colin Buhig, thanks very much. At Colin Buhig on Instagram, I think, is where if you need to. Dave, I think, had his number, but if you need to throw abuse at him, that's where you do it. And you'll find him on Instagram. Okay, you'll be back. We will look ahead to some of this weekend's games, particularly that Chelsea Arsenal one. That's a nice one on Super Sunday. Thanks, Colin.
No bother.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Now, it's been an interesting time to be a Liverpool fan of late. 9 losses in 12 games. Their worst run of form since November 1953. Now, it would be easy to get a very emotional and angry Liverpool fan on. But look, that's not what we're about. I want to get someone who'll leave his emotions to one side and talk facts. A man that we'll all be very familiar with. Off the Balls and Today FM's Phil Egan is here. How are you?
I'm very well, yeah.
Are you okay?
It's only a game, lads.
It's only a game. Yeah. But is this crisis mode?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it is. To be honest, the signs have been there for a while, and I raised it a few weeks ago with a few people where I said, I don't think Slot is going to see out the season. And they thought I was mad because they were like, he won the league last season. I was like, he did. But you just said it there, 9 defeats in 12. When does it become unacceptable? I mean, it's already unacceptable. You're the Premier League champions. Mm. You've lost 9 of your last 12 games. 71 years, their worst run since. So It's not good. And I suppose just in terms of if you try and break it down, people go, what's going wrong? There's a lot going wrong. There's so much going wrong that you can't get rid of the players. So they tend to just get rid of the manager. The big issue, obviously, you know, the players left in the summer, players came in. The players that have come in haven't been able to work into the team just yet. Now, that's on Arne Slot. We're in, we're at the end of November now, and he still hasn't got, like, there's not very few signs of it even happening or anything clicking. So that's the real concern. You know, it could take a few players a bit of time to bed in, but none of them have. And I just look at the way they're set up now as well. And with those defeats as well, basically, if you score first against Liverpool, you beat them. That's the way they are now. So that's a mentality thing as well. That's a confidence thing. And I just wonder, his message, it's no longer going to get through to the players. And people say, you know, like, they might look at people or different players and say, oh, they, you know, they lack effort. But I think sometimes you can lack direction because you don't know what you're doing. And it might look like you're not putting it in 100%, but they just look like they don't know what they want to do. Somebody gets the ball, there's no attacking options, even though they have a load of attacking players on the pitch. So they're making mistakes defensively. He then makes the same substitutions all the time, pretty much picks the same 11. So it's like, it's kind of Groundhog Day at the moment. And I just don't know where it improves. And people will say, who would you get in? But sometimes it's a case of you just need to get the manager out, and then maybe it just changes the mindset of the players.
I suppose one of the worst things a manager can do is lose a dressing room. And do you think he might be getting close to that happening?
It could be an issue. You know, he did so well last season. Obviously, he was taken over from a legend like Jurgen Klopp, and the beauty of what he did was he didn't change much. And then obviously this summer he's changed so much that I don't think he knows what he's doing in terms of. You look at the way he sets his teams up, I'm thinking, yeah, like, he's a very good coach tactically, but sometimes it's not about how good a coach are. Yeah, you also have man management, and you have to be able to get your message across to the players, and it just looks like it's all broken down at this stage.
Do you think it's unfair to say, though, that he just took over last season and kind of the momentum from Klopp, bit of bounce back ability as a new manager that you often get, and those things just merged, and that's why they won the league, and now the true colours are starting to shine? Would that be unfair in some way?
So there's no denying that he took over a very good squad that, you know, were right in the title race in Klopp's last season up until the last few games, and they seemed to just fall away. And probably the emotion of that season where Klopp had, he was burnt out. Now Slot comes in and it's a fresh voice, it's fresh energy. They start the season really well, but towards the end of the season, even before they wrapped up the title, there were signs that, like, I think back to the League Cup final against Newcastle, they were shocking that day.
Yeah.
Especially in the first half, it was like, this is just a dominant display from Newcastle, and teams had kind of worked out how to play against Liverpool. They were awful away to PSG, but they somehow won that game because Alisson had the game of his life, and then they got the goal from Harvey Elliott. But PSG then come to Anfield and they turn it around and they win on penalties. And there was just certain performances. Like, I remember Wolves, they beat Wolves at Anfield, but it was real nervy. They lost away to Fulham. I remember Kanate, who has been absolutely shocking this season now, and his future is up in the air as well, but he was poor that day. But because they got over the line, everyone just... And then towards the end of the season, the players went off to Dubai. Arne Slot went off to Ibiza. And they celebrated, and people just said, ah, yeah, look, they're entitled to celebrate. They're just after becoming Premier League champions. So there was a bit of a free pass for certain results because the season was already done. Then at the start of this season, they're winning games without playing well. And you're thinking, oh, that's promising because,
yeah,
you know, a team that doesn't play well but wins. You think back to the Newcastle game where they're 2-0 up, they're playing against 10 men, it goes back to 2-2, and then 16 at the time, Rio and Gamoa scores the winner, and you're thinking, yeah, wow, like, who's going to stop Liverpool? They'd already, like, they beat Arsenal as well. The only team to beat Arsenal this season.
Yeah, yeah. During the summer, were you happy with all the money that was being spent? I know hindsight is a great thing, and now you're thinking, you know, was all this money spent to make Liverpool a worse off team?
Yeah.
But at the time, were you thinking, you know, without the emotion, because a lot of fans, you could say, have the emotion of, yes, get Alexander Isak. Yeah. We want him or whatever. Yeah. But when you actually step back and you say, but do we need these lads, or where do these lads fit in the team? Or?
Well, like everyone said, oh, they signed a lot of players, but they also let a lot of players go as well. And I think Isak was the one that was talked about a lot, and the Ekitike one kind of came out of nowhere because it looked like he was going to go to Newcastle, not for the first time. And then he ends up signing for Liverpool, and then you think, is that the end of the Isak thing? Florian Wirtz, I think everyone was happy with that. You saw him play for Germany, for Leverkusen, a quality player. The one deal that didn't go through, and I remember it was transfer deadline day. Isak went through that day. Mark Gahey deal collapsed. Yeah. And I just had such a bad feeling that day that this is going to come back to haunt Liverpool, because I mentioned Canati. They signed Leone from Italy, a teenager. He's already done his cruciate. He had a very impressive debut against Southampton in the League Cup, but goes off with a cruciate. But can you sign an 18-year-old and say he's going to be ready to go? So Konate was the last, what I would like deem, senior centre-half they signed. That was 2021.
Isn't it mad to think, you know, at the end of last season, although you're saying you saw some cracks starting to appear in the ceiling, you wouldn't think this is where you'd be in the end of November 2025. But also you wouldn't think that the form of Mo Salah would nosedive the way it has. Could you see him leaving in January?
No, well, he's going to go off to AFCON and...
Yeah, about that. Could they become, maybe fix it when he's gone, and then he could come back and it could be a different situation for him?
He signed a two-year deal in the summer, and my general feeling was it's a two-year deal, but he'll probably only do another year. It almost just, by signing the two-year deal, it means they get a bit of money for him in the summer, but it also takes away the constant questions, is this your last season at Liverpool? Whereas if he was to get to the end of this season, he still has a year left on his contract, and somebody comes in and says there's a decent fee for a guy that's approaching his mid-30s and he's got a year left on his contract, and then it doesn't become a big thing. The problem, I don't think Salah is as big an issue as everyone. I think in general the attack is so blunt. Like at one stage last weekend when they played Forest, he got the ball on the right hand side, which is the touchline he always hogs. And at one stage, there's about six Forest players around them. All the Liverpool players were over the other side of the pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no real cohesion. There doesn't seem to be a plan. Even last night, Kerkez, who hasn't been a good signing, for a guy that got into the Premier League team of the season last year with Bournemouth, you just thought, right, this guy is just made for the way Liverpool want to play. He's just going to get up and down, up and down. Defensively, he hasn't been good, but he got the ball last night and he went out on the outside to run down the wing, but there was no one there with him, like, to play a ball to. So they just don't seem to have any ideas when they have possession. So if you're basically, if you're playing against Liverpool now, there's a few ways you can do it. You can sit in, let them have the ball. They just pass it from side to side. They don't know what to do. Eventually they give it away. And then when you get the ball, you can get at them so easy. You could press them and they'll give the ball away because they don't have the players that can play through the middle. Van Dijk is about the only one who could ping a 60-yarder across and over a press. But the likes of Kerkez, not comfortable in possession. Conor Bradley is, you know, he's a different type of player than Trent Alexander-Arnold. Unfortunately, he's injured. But even when you watch them now, they're so lightweight. There's no bite about them. Like, one of the things last season that stood out, they won the league, but one of the things people still talk about is, do you remember that time Bradley put in that tackle on Mbappe? For all, like, you know, money spent and fancy football, and people like to see that, football fans love to see someone getting absolutely minced in a legal way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It just
showing a bit of passion.
That's what it is. Yeah. Fire in the belly, and there's just nothing there. And it was so sterile at Anfield against PSV. Even, like, you know, even You'll Never Walk Alone at the start of the match just wasn't sung with the same gusto. And it was even, I felt, even if they beat PSV, obviously, which they didn't, that it wouldn't really matter much because they'd go back into the Premier League and it'd be more of the same.
What do you think will obviously winning games is the easiest thing that will change everything, but what becomes a good season now for Liverpool? Like, the title is
I think it's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, they're 11 points behind Arsenal.
That middle table, though, is so kind of clogged up that, you know, things could turn around fairly quickly.
Oh, it could do, but they're not. I don't think they catch Arsenal. 11 points behind Arsenal. They play them, you know, I think it's the 8th of January they play Arsenal. How many points will they be behind Arsenal by the time they go to the Emirates? I'd say more than 11, unless something changes. Now, like you said, it is clogged up that if you get a few wins, you can get back into the mix for the Champions League places. But that looks to me their best bet is to salvage that. Have a good run in Europe. I said, like, they have got certain players that would be more suited to European football. And then the cup competitions, well, sure, they're already out of the League Cup. He binned the League Cup off against Palace. Yeah. Palace have Liverpool's number. And that was another performance as well. They lost away to Palace this season. It was 2-1. But honestly, Palace destroyed them in the first half. It could have been 5 or 6-0 that day. They get it back to 1-1, and then they concede a silly goal, similar to how they conceded against United, where they just didn't deal with clearing a set piece fully. And yeah, just it's mad, though, how quickly it's flipped, where you go from the champions, you start off with 7 wins from 7, grinding out wins, and then all of a sudden, they've just fallen off a cliff, and they're just conceding goals. They've lost by 3 goals in their last 3 matches. That's just unheard of. That's why all these stats and just watching them, I just don't see how it gets any better. It's not like they are losing a game by like the odd goal, and it's just the way it all
they're
falls apart.
Times, yeah. West Ham on Sunday. How do you feel about a game like that?
But see, I honestly don't know. In terms of they score first, maybe it relaxes them and they start playing with more freedom. That's been a good fixture for Liverpool down the years away to West Ham. They won 5-0 there last season around Christmas time. But that kind of, they were really good that night in terms of how they attacked, and they scored different types of goals. They played on the counter-attack. None of that is there at the moment. Now, goals obviously change games. But as I said, if they concede first, you kind of almost concede that that's the game gone. That they can't win the game.
Yeah.
Like even watching them at Forest, 1-0 down, you're thinking, right, can they come back in the second half? 60 seconds into the second half, it's over. It's 2-0. Like, you may as well have just blown it up there. So West Ham have picked up a little bit, but they're not a great team, West Ham. So if Liverpool go and lose to West Ham, I just don't really see how he survives that.
Yeah. Might get you back on when Arne loses his job, if he does. it sounds to me like something like that could happen. I just honestly thought that there might be just too much money in the bank. Whatever happens this season, unless it's going down to a relegation battle, which, look, I really doubt that.
They're in relegation form, though.
They are, but you would just think that it couldn't keep on going the way it's going. You would think.
Remember that Mick McCarthy was asked, it can't get any worse. And then he said, it can.
Phil, thanks a million.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Welcome back to The Kickoff. Colm Buhig from Off The Ball is still here. Colm, this weekend is a big weekend for a lot of teams. Let's focus in on Super Sunday. Mm-hmm. Chelsea v Arsenal. Chelsea have a great chance of closing it down to 3 points. Well, I say a great chance. They have a chance. Will they do it?
Second against first, who would have thunk it?
You wouldn't have thunk it.
Who would have thought that Chelsea
a couple of months ago
were going to be Arsenal's biggest challengers come the end of November? It's hard to believe.
It's a weird season.
Very strange. We're having this exact discussion during the week. How unusual this season is. So Arsenal are head and shoulders above everyone else. Manchester City are inconsistent. Just when you think Pep's about to build another title challenging side, they kind of unconvince you of that opinion. Liverpool are a rabble. Manchester United are a circus. Tottenham seem to have no self-belief. You're looking left with Chelsea. And then it turns out when Chelsea get their act together, they're ahead of a side. But Chelsea lost to United at Old Trafford. You know, they went down to 10 men early on, but so did United later on in that half. And they look completely unconvincing. But then you have this young fella, Estevao, the Brazilian, 18-year-old, they signed from Palmeiras, who actually scored for Palmeiras against Chelsea in the Club World Cup during the summer. He starred during the week against Barcelona in the Champions League. And Chelsea looked brilliant, and that was without Cole Palmer. And the thing about Chelsea is they have about 1,047,000 players. Just constantly have lads that you're forgetting about all the time. Oh yeah, they got Joao Pedro from Brighton.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Alejandro Garnacho plays from Pedro Neto. Yeah. They have about 55 wingers. So they have so many options. They have so many options that the thing about Chelsea is that we don't talk about them that much because it's like, what is Chelsea's identity? It's like Cole Palmer up top, and that's kind of it.
But then when
you actually look at it, then you have Moises Caicedo, who on his day is probably the best player in his position in the league. Enzo Fernandez, World Cup winner beside him. So you're like, oh, that's a pretty good core. their goalkeeping situation isn't the best. Namely, their strongest defence, you're probably going between a few people there, not totally nailed down to any partnership or player. So I suppose, look, maybe in modern football that works, that these lads are playing essentially every 3 days and they want an enormous squad. It's just hard to nail down what Chelsea's identity is. Like, you know, we mentioned Jose Mourinho earlier in the show. Like, you knew that core group. Like, you knew, like, Cech and Terry and Lampard and Drogba. Chelsea are nowhere near that, but maybe they don't need to be in 2025 in this very unusual season. As for Arsenal, you can score against them, and now they're scoring goals for fun. And that is dangerous.
From play as well.
That's something that they weren't doing.
No, I know I was often saying they're kind of boring to watch, or like a set-piece team. I mean, the game against Tottenham, they threw that out the window, and now, you know, they're not, they're kind of scary now.
Well, Eber Etze is like a joy to watch because he's like a class player. It's cool.
What a player. So it's like,
oh, yeah, I'll have him. And then during the week in the Champions League, they beat Bayern Munich. Hard to read too much into the Champions League at this stage of the season because it's this enormous league. What's the really the meaning of any of these? Because the top 24 sides go through.
Yeah, it didn't really matter. It is
not really,
but in some ways
it matters when you're playing the game itself,
for sure.
And it was 1-1 at half time with Bayern, and Arsenal showed their superiority in the second half. And I just don't think they would have done that in previous years. So they are legitimately improving under Mikel Arteta. Hard to believe, Cahill. This is Arteta's first job. He just so happens to have been in it a long time. It's approaching 6 years, I think.
Isn't it great that they said they showed patience, though?
Which is so unusual in this day and age.
It is.
Because their North London rivals could be getting impatient with Thomas Frank. And I'm not saying it's the exact same situation between Arteta and Frank, because Frank had previous managerial experience and Arsenal have bigger expectations than Tottenham, let's say. But, like, that's what happens if you are patient with the right person. It's identifying whether it is the right person. And it sure as hell looks like Arteta is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and one thing about Chelsea as well is you have to give credit to Maresca and the way he is managing all these players. It is pretty impressive because, like, you know, in some ways, the issue with Arne Slot at the moment, and one of the criticisms you could throw at him is that, yeah, you bought all these players and but you have to find a way how to make it work with all these players.
Yeah.
Whereas Maresca, if you can manage to kind of, you know, dot players in and out and keep everyone happy, I mean, that's a fair job.
There's a coldness to Maresca which is beneficial to him in the way he manages this enormous group of players, like an NFL squad. There's so many of them.
Yeah.
So he told Raheem Sterling to do one, like, when he took over, and Sterling had been a prominent feature of their pre-season, and then afterwards, like, you don't have any players in this club. So there's probably a lack of warmth, which would help us when you have the size of that squad, because you can't probably get too close to any one particular player.
Yeah,
or a small group of players.
Which is the better approach there? Are you to try and keep everyone on side, or do you just have to be cold and make lads hungry and make them want to take their chance?
Chelsea are a bit different, I think, to most other sides. There's a ruthlessness to Chelsea. There's a lack of warmth to it. Like, their fans, like, we got a Chelsea fan on now, they'll of course argue that point till the end. Chelsea are a very warm club and very passionate. I'm not saying they don't have any passion and maybe even warmth for each other when they're there, but when they're outside looking in, just players come and players go in that club, and it doesn't seem to matter.
Do you still think they could have a chance against Arsenal? What way do you think? Or is Arsenal just too good?
It's very hard to argue against an Arsenal result at the moment.
Stamford Bridge, by the way.
Yeah.
Half four on Sunday.
If any team's going to do it at the moment, it's Chelsea. That's the best way I can put it.
Go on, stick your neck out.
But
why not? You're not getting any of the other predictions right, so
the
grain.
I said 3-2 last week and it was like 4-2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not right.
But it was very close, you know. And show your workings, Matt style, you know. If I gave you the answer and didn't show you the workings, there'd be no marks, you know. Show your workings, get a little bit of points.
Fair, fair.
I'll say, I will say that Chelsea will get a 2-2 against Arsenal.
Okay.
It'll be a good game.
Yeah, I do feel like it will be a good game. Live on Sky Sports, kickoff 4:30. And that's when it's dark outside. We've no afternoons anymore. It's just morning and then it's night. So there you go. Put on the fire and watch that. And then when that's over, you've got Ireland's Fittest Family.
Oh, yeah, you went to that, yeah?
Oh, I love it.
I'd say you'd love to be on that. I'd say this show is for that. It's all a ruse to get you on.
To get on
this
that.
This is a fugazi, like. Yeah. I'd say this never goes out anywhere.
I'd just say to Davey Fitz, say, look, I mean, I know I could talk a good game.
You're such a perfect candidate for that show.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it. Too many coaches in it this year. That's my only criticism. It's a bit, you know, it's hard to follow.
Would you want to be a coach or a contestant?
Oh, no, contestant.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Why, would the Minogues be fit, like?
It's always a Christmas conversation. Who would I pick if I was the one trying to pick
What's
the family?
Your breakdown on the family situation? Siblings?
Brother and two sisters.
Where do you come?
I'm in the middle. So I have a younger sister as me, and then there's an older sister. So I'd go younger sister, older brother, and then, I don't know, that'd be an awkward one. The fourth spot's up for grabs. Because you can have a cousin, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You can, I think.
Can you?
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, how yeah. close is the family connection?
I'm not sure, but it'd have to be loose enough for us to have a chance anyway.
Show me your blood.
Anyway.
Okay.
Anyway.
Petition to get Cahill on Fittest Family there.
There you go, yeah. The other game we'll have a look at quickly is Crystal Palace and United, also on Sunday, 12 p.m. Just when we thought things were going well for Manchester United. Yeah. Here we are after that Everton debacle. We're screaming at Amarin once again. Just change the formation at some stage. If you, okay, whatever about having a formation that you're set to start with, if you're playing against 10 men, change it. It must be frustrating as a Manchester United
just
fan.
Just when you think you're out of the crisis, they bring you back in.
Come on.
So he doesn't change it when Everton hilariously go down to 10 men in the fashion that they did with two men fighting each other. Did you ever get that in the hurling pitch?
No, it's an interesting one. Like, I was thinking, why would you send him off? Leave them at it. But he's just striking a player, whatever colour the jersey is on. But you're kind of saying, you know, as I love David Moyes. Did you hear him after? He kind of liked a bit of it. He said,
"Well, of course he did, because he won." Didn't care.
I love that though. Yeah, you know, sometimes it's good to see that.
It is. Yeah, the ref was very quick to brandish the red, wasn't
he?
In this day and age of VAR. Would have thought to like have a look at it. But yeah, like, keep him on the pitch. It's the 13th minute of the game. It could have ruined it. Turned out it just inspired Everton. United got worse. Kieran Dewsbury Hall, which I actually haven't talked about the goal enough this week. It's a brilliant goal, the way he takes that. But United are like very disappointed in the sense that they actually had loads of chances. They had 20-odd shots. But their play was just so predictable, like, right? You can't, no one can see what I'm doing here, but I'm like, I have three fingers in front of me. So it's like centre-half to centre-half to centre-half, outright, cross it in, head it away. Yeah. Do that 76 times, lads, and hopefully we'll get an equaliser out of it. It ironically reminded me of a David Moyes Manchester United performance in the sole season he was in charge in a 2-2 against Fulham, when that's all they would do. They just kept on swinging the ball in from out wide repeatedly, and eventually it brought them an equaliser. But I felt this was never going to happen on Monday night just gone. The commentator on Sky said in about the 67th minute, plenty of time left here. I was like, yeah, there is, but sure, we may as well be here all night.
They're not going to score. Yeah,
I just didn't believe that they would. And I was never that convinced in this unbeaten run of five games. I was like, Jesus, how bad were Sunderland? Brighton were poor. Liverpool are going through their own crisis. And then the last game before the international break was a 2-2 at Tottenham.
Yeah.
Last kick of the game. Now, that was warranted, that draw. But like, Spurs are no great shakes. To your point of it being a very unusual season, United went into that game against Everton on Monday 10th. And had they won that match, they would have been fourth. Champions League, like. Champions League, this joke of a club getting the Champions League. What does that say about the Premier League, the best league in the world? But we do love it here in the kickoff with Sky.
Oh, well, okay. So what do you think of this weekend then, Sunday?
Well, Palace are really good. I'll put it this way. If Palace don't get at least a point out of this game on Sunday at 12, they'll be devastated. Because they're a better side than United at the moment.
Mm.
So they should win this game. But United are just weird, Kyle. They're just weird. They could go to Selhurst Park and win, and it would make no sense why are they winning? Why are they winning any game? Their style of play is not suited to the players that they have, and yet they will win. So you're telling me that's individual quality? But all they're labelled this club as having no individual quality of note.
Mm.
Weird team in an unusual league.
Just going to say, that's why they're getting results, possibly. Yeah, Crystal Palace will win.
I'll go a draw. I don't know why. 1-1. But I don't know why. Why am I going for a draw there? Because United just do this every so often.
Yeah.
Get something right.
And after a terrible Monday night, they'll just...
Yeah, there's just something about it. But I'll go 1-1. I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest if Palace won 4-1.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'll go 1-1.
I hear you. Well, both of those games are live on Sky Sports Sunday. And I think, yes, we have Aston Villa and Wolves is also Sunday. That's at 2 p.m. Mm. And Forest take on Brighton, also at 2 p.m. I'll talk to you next week.
You will. Joe, one more thing I want to say here for people, right, to get excited about is that, you know, Sky's coverage of Premier League games during Christmas. Mm. I love it. because they do a little Christmas jingle every time they show upcoming fixtures.
Oh, okay.
And I love that, man.
That's what gets
I love it, man. I love it.
There you go.
I just need to get happy after Troy Parrott again, all right? I just got to back up again.
Thanks, Colm.
All right.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.